Hello and welcome back to the Fowler Hour. Today I'm going to be joined by Melinda Livesey. You probably know Melinda if you follow any of the content or the future or any of my stuff that you're kind of attached to. You've probably seen her logo studies. You've probably seen her on the future as a co-host, maybe even followed some of her brand strategy journey up to this point. And honestly, I'm very, very excited to have her on the show. Her resume and stuff she's involved with right now is really long, and I really am excited to get into this conversation. I'm recording this before we start, maybe a couple minutes before we're about to start recording. So just to do a little bit of housekeeping as well, make sure you check the description. You can get 2 free months of Skillshare. I don't need to say much more than that. You have access to 30,000 courses for 2 months. You can do whatever you want with that. Learn a new design program, learn a whole new skill, even learn from people like Baugasm, Gary Vee, Paula Scher, Aaron Draplin. I don't need to say much more than that. Go to the link in the description, skl.sh/cfowlerdesign for 2 free months of Skillshare. Go get it, and I'm going to go and speak to Melinda right now. I'm going to say this, I'm going to get it wrong. It's going to be Melinda Livesey.
You got it right.
Hallelujah. This is like the first time I ever get these names right, because my goodness. So Melinda, how are you doing today?
Oh, I'm fantastic.
Excellent.
Wonderful. Starting off my day with you, so...
Oh, that's really sweet. Hopefully it's like maybe not as sweet as a cup of coffee, but maybe just as energizing. That's kind of what we'll go for today.
Yes, I expect that.
So for people listening at home, you probably know who Melinda is if you're part of my audience, but for the people who may not, and for the evergreenness of this content, Melinda, could you give us a couple of sentences on maybe what you are, what you do? I'm a little nervous, guys. It's okay.
It's all good. So like you said, I'm Melinda Livesey. I am a brand strategist, but I originally started as a graphic designer and brand identity designer. I made a pretty big pivot from my appearance on The Future, and working with Christo as my coach. And so in that, working with him, I pivoted to brand strategy. And now I not only do brand strategy with clients, but I also teach it. And I have other products as well that I'm sure we're going to be talking about.
Yeah. So actually, just one of the things that I was doing for people listening at home before the show, I typically do this for all of my guests. So it's not like crazy, super, super special. But I went through Melinda's LinkedIn. I go and look at everything she's trying to do. Go and look at the Behance. Go and look at the Instagram. See what's going on. Because when I first started following Melinda's content, it was logo explorations and being a new-ish co-host on The Future. But the resume list is quite long right now, and the projects and things you're involved in is quite long. So if you don't mind, I'm just going to read out what you sent me as an update, because I got it wrong. And there's like a whole bunch of different new stuff on there too. So you list yourself as a brand strategist and instructor for Marks & Makeup, which is obviously your kind of base company that you've set up. Co-founder and instructor at Prelance, which is your course and freelance product-based business. Co-host on The Future and a brand strategist at Radcat Design. Now that's 4 titles across 3 different mediums, 3 different businesses, and that's a little insane from my perspective. So what, did you ever think it would be this way, that you have so many things on your plate?
Well, I've always juggled more than one thing. Even when I worked as a full-time designer, I always had something going on the side. I was either starting another business or freelancing or you name it. I always had multiple things. And I don't know if that's just the curse of being creative. You just can't sit still in one place for too long or do the same thing for too long. I've got that. Whatever that syndrome is, that's totally me, as you can see.
So is that based on the kind of the idea of not being able to focus on maybe the one thing you should be doing? Or is it just this desire to, I want to try something new now, I want to do this, and just kind of reach into everything?
Yeah, I think it's a mix. Part of it is the focus, as I'll get really deep into something, and then I'll have that shiny object syndrome. I'm like, oh, but this would be a really good idea. But then there's also the other idea of diversifying my income, which I'm also really big on. So maybe it's just my excuse, though, of giving myself an allowance to follow those shiny objects, because I'm like, well, I'm diversifying my income. So there's an excuse for it. But it does, they all bring in revenue. So I'm like, well, it all works. So why not have fun while I'm doing it instead of just focusing on one thing?
Yeah, and well, that's the ultimate goal, isn't it? The ultimate goal is to make sure that you have money coming in when you're sleeping. Because
exactly.
I don't think designers and creative people talk about this enough. I mean, obviously, you've been around The Future team, and obviously I've met Chris and hung out and got that mindset of, let's figure out something that can make money while you sleep. But people still trade time for money. People still, like, it makes no sense for me, and probably doesn't for you either, but before we kind of move towards the product stuff, I want to just dive in on the stuff you're doing right now. And Radcat Design, I had a kind of a brief look at those guys. They seem really cool.
They're really cool. That's newer too. That's why I did add that, because that's going to be something I'm going to be talking about. This is like the first time I'm actually talking about it publicly. We'll be working together a lot more next year, starting next year. So there's some friends that I've already done some, I've referred clients to them and we work really well together. It worked out great. They don't have a brand strategist. So they're like, hey, what if you come on the team, just project by project only at the moment, and just see how it goes. And then all of the client work that I get in for brand strategy, instead of it going straight to me and I handle it and then I hand it off to an agency after, all of the client work would then go through them and they would handle the admin work and the proposals and the contracts, because like you have on the list, I have other products and services and things that I want to do. So if I can get the admin stuff out of the way and I can still do brand strategy, that's ideal. Plus I want to work with people I really like and their design is amazing. So any strategy that we do, brand strategy, I know would be executed well if I were to work with them. So I was like, well, yeah, of course I'm going to work with you guys. Yeah, so that is something that is very new and it took a lot of things off of my shoulders that I don't have to handle now. So
yeah. And that's going to be kind of my thoughts, because I'm very much like you. I like the shiny things. I like to pick something up and be like, hey, I'm going to try this thing for 30 days. Or now I have 6 new habits and the 6 new things that I'm doing and I shouldn't have been doing any of them because all of that. Blah, blah, blah. So where do you find the time to balance all of these? Is it just something that you've learned over time of years of running your own business, going up and down and through all of those things? Or is it specific tactics that you use to kind of manage that time?
Oh, that's a really good question. I think it's a couple different things. First, it's, you know, I try a lot of different things. And when I see something growing and doing well, I think, okay, I need to form a process or a habit around that because it's actually growing. So I need to keep that going. So that's one thing I do. I live by my calendar. If you look to my calendar, people get freaked out when they see it because it's all color coded. It's completely filled for the week. I have meetings are color coded in yellow. So I know if I see too much yellow in a day, that I need to cancel meetings or not schedule anymore for the day because I want to make sure to block off time for deep work too. And so I'm constantly trying to tweak or start new habits, especially content creation and writing. I will be so good for a while and I'll have my processes set and then all of a sudden something will happen and I'll fall off that train. And so I feel like I'm constantly looking at my habits, looking at my processes and having to refocus or readjust. And then over the time of, you know, years of doing this and juggling multiple things, I'm learning how to prioritize what's working and getting rid of everything that's not. And so I used to waste my time so much going towards things that then are a dead end. And I would say in the past couple of years, I'm learning how to identify what's actually growing and what's actually working, and then prioritizing my week to give way more time to things that are actually going to pay off versus just me spinning my wheels just because I'm a creative person and want to feel like I'm productive.
Yeah. And spinning your wheels like that, it makes you feel like everything's crushing you because you're not moving.
Yeah.
And
oh, yeah.
When that feeling comes in, if you're not making any kind of tangible progress, I feel this as well, where you look at your calendar and you go, oh shit, like I've filled up this entire week with stuff and now I have to cancel all of it, or I have to move all of this, or something. I've missed one day, and now the next 10 days are out of whack. And so it's just kind of been trial and error up to this point. It sounds to me that you've picked up things along the way, but it's just been taking on what you can, and then picking up what you can as well, but obviously knocking things off that are not growing.
Exactly. Exactly. And I would say another thing that I actually, a habit or maybe a tactic really that I try, and I've tried this for the past couple of years, is I have a vision, like an overarching vision, and I've solidified it or clarified it now to the point where I have it as a sentence where I want to work on things I love with people I like anytime I want. That's my vision of, that's just how I want to live life. So I think every year, how can the things that I do and I put my time into and get revenue from, how can those things feed that big vision of me wanting to live a life that is more the creative freedom that we all want, right? We all want to work with people we like. We all want to work on projects and things that we love, no matter what that is, if it's for a client or for ourselves, and want to work whenever we want, as well as, you know, paying our bills and making enough money to live. But I just want to live a life like that. So I always reevaluate what I'm doing and where I'm spending my time. And is it contributing to that overarching vision? And that's really helped me too. And it's helped me just go about things more happy, because I'm not just looking at it as, oh, it's just, is this going to pay my bills? Or should I be doing this thing? It's like, is it feeding that vision? And that's really helped me.
So do you run this like an equation then? Does it come through as like this new thing, this new input is coming in, or I have this new opportunity? Do you then run that by this kind of mantra that you've written and say, does this achieve at least one of these or two of these or three of these things?
Yeah, I should break this down, like share it in content somewhere now that we're talking. It gives me inspiration. But yeah, I have the vision, and then right under the vision, I have generally what I'm going to be working on that year, and or my focus really. And so my focuses change every year. That vision normally doesn't. So the focus is, I think right now it's building influence, being known as a brand strategist, and coming out with my own product. So being my own client, and that's where my focuses are. And so when something new comes, I put it through that filter. Does it fit with those focuses that are aligned with my overarching vision? And then I can say, oh no, this is just going to derail me, or it's going to take time away from me building content or building my own products. I shouldn't be doing that. So yeah, things do go through a filter now.
Do you think that it's something that maybe people should be looking at making for themselves? Maybe not as clear as a one sentence kind of repeat it in your head very easily mantra every day, but to have some level of abstract focus, if that makes sense, a large focus or large vision, as you said.
Are you asking if people should have that for
yes.
What or what was the, yeah I believe they should, and I've actually shared this process with my mastermind group. So one of the many things that I do have a private Facebook group that it's considered a mastermind group now. Everyone's focused on their goals. Usually we do it in 3-month sprints, so I only open enrollment every 3 months. I've since not an open enrollment for the past one or two times. I haven't, just because we have such a solid group in there. But with them, I've shared this process and they've really taken off with it. They're like, this helps give me clarity. I know where I'm headed. Instead of just trying to list out random success metrics, like I want to make X amount of dollars per year and I want to get X amount of clients. It's like, yes, those things are good and we need to know, have measurable results, but we need them pointed somewhere. Like, why do you want to make so much revenue? Why do you want 10 clients versus 100? What will that do for your life? And so we start first with that vision, the focuses, and then make the success metrics line up with everything else. And it's really helped the group. So I would suggest it for other people too, to try out.
It's building from kind of top of the pyramid down, isn't it? It's mm-hmm. It's more of a case of you have your focal point and then everything else kind of fits into that puzzle, rather than trying to say money will solve my problems or so many clients will solve my problems.
Yeah, and I've had people in the group too, that's exactly right, that have said, yeah, I didn't meet my success metrics, but I actually got what I was going for. I actually got the focus, and they ended up going, so I'm good. I'm happy because I reached my vision. And I realized that I didn't need those success metrics exactly to get me there. And they were still happy. And I figured, well, if you got to your destination, then does it really matter how you got there? And I think sometimes we do screw up, or we replace what our vision is with things that we think will get us there, like the money. Like if we have money, it'll solve all of our problems. And it's like, well, no, your problems might be solved in a different way that don't include money. Which is a weird thing to think about, but.
And yeah, it's something I tweeted about the other day, actually, was that I think having a goal of getting more money is just a cop-out, really. Like, to be blunt about it, it's kind of a cop-out. And I've been subject to this because it's a case of like, well, I just see that like these people have more money because of X, Y, and Z, therefore they can do X, Y, and Z. And it's like, actually, if I sit down and do the maths, I don't actually need to be making that much money. it's something like, I can't remember the exact metric, it's something like $75,000 or $80,000 a year, anything higher, and you're not any happier because you can achieve everything you want to with that much.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So exactly. Money just becomes a cop-out, but it's everything that young creatives want. It's everything that people without a vision want. Or at least that's what I see.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, I completely agree with you. Because a lot, yeah, just look at yourself and stop comparing ourselves to other people. If we can survive on $25,000 a year and be completely happy, cool. Then you have, think of all the time potentially that you could have during the year to just work on your own pet projects that you want or concept projects. And that might allow you to work a lot less. But if we always look at the money, then we're just going to be in this hamster wheel because it's never going to be enough, ever, if that's the mentality.
Did that ever bog you down though?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So I'm passionate about it. Because for years, I would just work endlessly. And it was almost like a hamster in a wheel because I'm like, but I just a little more money, just a little more money. I couldn't be working right now and I wouldn't rest. And we had, I think you had asked me about self-care or that we were going to chat about that too. I would not take care of myself. I would think, well, if I have the money, that will take care of me. So then I would just work insane amount of hours and not stop and not take care of me so that I can do better work later or think better later. I just didn't do that.
Yeah, well, moving kind of, I've written it in the topic list for a bit later, but what does that look like now? Because as you say, I follow the same route as you. I just burn and burn and burn and burn until there's no wick left, let alone wax. But so what does that look like now for you in terms of, maybe not self-care, I feel like it's a bit hippy-dippy, but even just kind of, what do you do to take a break? What do you do to relax and de-stress and find a way around these other mindsets?
It's hard. I think I'm still trying to figure it out, but I'm much more aware of it. So awareness is the first step. So always just become aware.
Admitting there's a problem.
Admit there's a problem. I'm kind of in that space right now. Like, there's a problem here, Melinda. I'm getting better at it. And some things that I've been doing, one of them is having success metrics and then building out what are the tasks that I need to do to get me to where I'm trying to go. And so I'll break it down like, for example, I have a goal of launching a boot camp in March. So then I had to reverse engineer. Okay, well, what needs to be done then? Okay, I need the sales stuff all done. I need my sales emails. I need to refine the course. And I worked my way backwards to where I know what I need to do each week, roughly. I probably need to refine that a bit, but roughly I know what I need to do each week. So then I know what I need to do each day and accomplish that. And so once I finish that, I can be done for the day. I don't need to be keep on like spinning my wheels. So if you can have a strategy of, if you know where you want to go, you know what you want to accomplish, reverse engineer it, plan out what you need to do each day, each week, each hour, if you have to. And I like to focus on only one accomplishment each day. If I get anything else done, it's the cherry on top, but I really try to not overload myself with like 10 things that I'm trying to do in a day. It's just, what's the one thing that I can do? And that's from the book, The One Thing. What's the one thing I can do today that's going to reach that goal for the week, that's going to reach the goal for the month, for the 3 months, for the year? So I'm always trying to keep focus on like, where am I headed? And know what I need to do to get there and then cut it off. But I've been having a really hard time. Like, I finished what I needed to do even the other day. And I thought, what do I do with myself? Like, I'm done. I don't have to work more. Cause that work mentality, it's like, it's always there. You can always work. You can always do more. You can always write more content. I'm like, I don't have to. If I'm getting to where I'm going, then I can stop. So I'm having difficulty when I have the extra time. Like, what do I do? This is weird. But I have been planning a lot of things with friends. So getting myself out of the house and not just having that time alone where I'm just off in never land thinking of all the work I should be doing. So I do plan a lot of things with friends to just get me out, get me not thinking about work and having a good time and resting.
Yeah, that's what's going to be my question, is what is actually the way you stop that mindset and that kind of intrusive thought coming into your head? Because it is more of a plague, I think. Many creative people have it and many people just have the opposite. My girlfriend, Lydia, she has the complete opposite. She's like, right, well, I'm done with work today. I'm done. I've done 6 hours of illustration or whatever she's doing. She's just like, whoop, And then she's just in her PJs watching Netflix or doing whatever she's doing.
Oh, I'm jealous of that.
I can't switch off.
No. One of the things recently that really helped me, it was unexpected. I took a random improv class with my cousin, and I've never done that before. It was so random. We were really both nervous about that too. Just, you know, what they're going to like make fun of you. I don't know. But there, and I don't know if you've ever tried that or have looked into improv classes. They're so fun. Oh my gosh. But that helped get me out of my head. Like, I had to be present in that moment and I had to listen to the person talking to me. I couldn't decide what I was going to do or say and all the steps ahead. I just had to be present, and it was better than meditation for me because it forced me. I was accountable because there were people there and you had to wait for the person to say whatever they're going to you. And that really helped. So things that get me to the present moment, I'm sure exercise would do that too. I should be doing more of that as well.
But, I was waiting for it. That was going to be my thing. I was be like, I just go to the gym, just shuts off. But yeah, for some people, it's just, I see what you're saying. When you are that present, and it's one of the reasons that I've started to, I have this thing on my phone that stops me using apps. I then have a watch instead. Like I try and be as present as possible. Like when you go out with your friends to dinner or a drink or just speak on the phone with them, whatever it's going to be, or even that improv class, by being present, it just shuts off everything else. Do you find then after maybe that class, you've gone, oh, my subconscious has kind of worked on this thing in the background. Like it's, or we've got this thing solved that I hadn't thought about, or even something in the improv class may have taught you a way to get around something.
Oh yeah. Oh, definitely. I think anytime you're able to just be in the present moment, your mind does think of things. And there's so many things that I learned in the class too, of just emotions and communication. And when you're in the present moment, you learn so much that then you can take back, which I did. I take back to my creative endeavors and it makes it so much more rich than if I were to just not go to a class like that, work the entire night and try to figure out something or have a breakthrough. I think if I do something like that more often, I'll probably have more creative breakthroughs because you're coming back to the table with so much more information about life and about people and about communication that you can't get on your own. I'm telling myself this as I'm saying it to you, like, Linda, do more of those things because everything else will be that much more rich.
Yeah. I mean, I saw a post today from Seth Godin that just literally said, go outside more. And it's the same thing. Like, when you can shut that off, when you can absorb information from out of context, so out of your design echo chamber or your strategy echo chamber, wherever you want to sit it, it becomes more rich, as you say, and you get a deeper understanding for what you do. Because I'm sure in that room that you were with, all those people, most of them would have regular day jobs. Most of them did something else, worked in corporate, worked in theatre, worked as a labourer, whatever it's going to be. And that experience then pans onto you in a weird yes, no improv setting.
Exactly. Yeah. And then you learn how to, especially like you said, you have all these people from different backgrounds too, and you're interacting with them and you're hearing how they speak and the words that they use and their point of reference and what they understand. And especially as a brand strategist, I am helping businesses communicate with their ideal customers. So I need to know how to communicate in general and how and what will help make connections between people. And so the more that I can get out there and make connections myself and observe how people communicate, the better.
Building that empathy ability to see it.
Exactly. Yeah.
So it seems like in terms of self-care, that it's more of a case of fill the time if you're like Melinda or I, because it's I'm the same. Yeah. I can't sit still.
No.
And I'll find myself like I did today. I was like, I could like lazily sit on my computer and redesign this landing page on my website. And then 6 hours later, I'm like, I've achieved something I could have done in an hour in six. Why did I do this? It's just one of those things though, isn't it? You sometimes can't let it go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's I don't know if it's also, and this is going a little deeper too with it. I wonder if it's also because for me, it's a part of my identity too. So just the mere fact of working on something, it feels like, well, this is who I am and this is what I'm supposed to be doing. But doing it too much, you just, you know, there's just a time where you need to cut it off and again, go experience the world and not just, it's like a self-gratifying thing of just, oh, I'm just going to keep doing this because I like doing it. And, but then in the end you see it's not serving anybody. So it becomes like an unhealthy habit.
That's the question. Do you see your identity as more of a creative person, or is the identity that you are busy or that you are working in inverted commas?
Yeah, I think that's a good reflection question when I'm in those modes. I think I see it as being creative, but then I look back and go, oh, no, that was just busy.
Because so busy is the killer, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, it definitely is. And especially busy when it's not. Well, and there's this weird thing with creativity and innovation where it's messy and it's wasteful. We need to go through a bunch of iterations and waste a ton of time to get to the gold. But there is a point where we're just going in circles and it's not getting anywhere because we're not really shooting at a goal. We're just doing it for the sake of doing it. And that's why too, strategy was so appealing to me because it gave purpose to all of the creativity versus just going in circles and hoping you're going to come up with this amazing idea. We actually had a purpose for it and we had like, this is what we needed to do. And so then it gave creativity a purpose. So that's why I'm drawn more to that because I think I'm done with creativity being just busy work.
You're kind of more of a process person then.
Yeah. Process. Yeah. Process, goals, purpose. Why are we even doing this project? That was one major frustration in my career. I would say for the first eight, nine years was designing because someone told me they needed, say, you know, whatever it is, a logo, a layout, whatever it was. They never told me why and what it was going to do. So the only purpose was, oh, you just need to create this thing. But I never knew the why behind it and knew like, is this actually going to make a difference in the world? Why am I even creating this? And then as I got older and I learned strategy, it's like, oh no, there's actually a ton of reasons why we should be creating these things. And so I think for me, it goes to purpose. There's an underlying purpose for things.
Yeah. And actually being able to see the end result as well, because when you're not coming in at ground level without that why, you're then never quite sure where to pitch the rest of it. Because it's something that I've written about before is you don't throw spaghetti at the wall until it sticks to tell if it's cooked. Like you can't, that's not how it works. Like you just can't throw things at a wall and see what happens. You just go round and round and round and round and round. And endless revision cycles are literally like burnout fuel. That's all it is. Mm-hmm. It's like throwing petrol on a fire. Like it just...
It is the worst.
And I'm sure you've experienced much more of it than I have because I've come in and being like, that's dumb. Like, I'm not doing that. I'm not doing endless revisions. I'm not playing that game. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure many people listening have had clients like that or have had their process broken down that way. And it just isn't productive and it's not mentally gratifying. It doesn't get you money. It doesn't build your business. And just to be open with you, it basically made me not work for like 10 months. Mm-hmm. Like, I just can't. I couldn't do it. I couldn't even open Illustrator. Until last week, I hadn't opened Illustrator for 3 months.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's real. That happens. I get it.
But changing tack, let's keep kind of switching towards, you brought up launching a product, a bootcamp in March.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, maybe not so much diving into exactly what that is, but more towards the product-leaning side of your business. So talking about Prelance and the courses that you do through there and the products that you provide through that. Now, there is one or two videos talking about you shifting towards product-based business on the future and talking about those product ideas. But other than that, I don't know too much more about how you kind of pivoted towards that other than diversifying income. But there must have been something else that drew you towards it, because there's a big shift from going to serving clients to serving other designers and other creatives.
Yeah, that's it. That's a fantastic question. So when I started, when I left, really when I got laid off from my full-time job, this is going on about 5 years now. And when I got laid off there, I had always wanted to work for myself And I thought, okay, I was always doing this on the side. Now this is my time to make it my full-time thing and not look back. And that's when I had started my brand identity business. And then at the same time, I had a lot of people, even from my full-time job, that were like, how do you freelance? How do you write a contract? How do you write a proposal? And they had asked me for years at my in-house job because they knew that I was freelancing on the side. And they're like, oh, you're freelancing on the side. I want to do that too. So for years, I've had people ask me about it. When I started working for myself full-time, about a year into it, I had so many questions with that. And I discovered Pat Flynn from Smart Passive Income. So if you are into passive income at all, that's a fantastic podcast for it. And I had stumbled upon it and I had been listening to his podcast for about a year at that point. I'm like, this is amazing. Passive income, make money while you sleep. Work now, work hard now so you can reap the benefits later. I think that's one of the things that Pat Flynn always talks about. And I thought, I can do that. I can work really hard right now so that I can take those rests, those times of rests. And so about a year into working for myself, I was like, okay, I'm going to make this product, whatever it is, passive income. And I thought, well, I'm being asked so much about how to freelance. Why don't I just start there? So I had a friend who we were talking about starting something together. So she's my business partner now with it. And it was just supposed to be a side thing. Like it wasn't going to be the main focus at that moment. I'm like, we'll just have it on the side. It'll be extra income. So at that time, I want to say I probably spent a total of 40 hours getting that course together, and it was sprinkled in between client work. So over maybe 6-7 weeks, I was recording the course as well as trying to juggle my client work. So it's always been the split of teaching on one side, but then also doing the client work on the other, and started a beta course and for that and then put that together. So that's always been on the side, like running on the side. And I've always been trying to think like, how much time should I give to that as opposed to what I'm currently doing? And but yeah, it came up because I was looking into passive income and how can I have a product that maybe brings in recurring revenue, especially for the feast or famine moments when client work is not as prevalent, it's not coming in that much, and what could I do then to counteract that? Because feast or famine's real when you're working for yourself.
So you saw the opportunity in that people were asking the question and felt you could serve them that way. So prior to that point, did you ever consider making products for other creatives or other designers? Because from my perspective, right now, I could, and I know that I could make some products that would sell pretty well. But I have no desire to because it's so much extra time to put that in for the creative side. And I'm like, I have so much I want to learn, I have so much I want to do, that adding that to the repertoire of extra stuff is just like, is that too far? Is that my grander vision to teach or help other designers in this moment? And what I wanted to ask you was, as I now look to other opportunities that are passive income, that are selling assets I've made previously, for example, did you have a mindset shift or did you always know that you were going to do this at some point?
I've always taught, and I think it's always been in me to teach. I started teaching piano lessons at 16. It's like all through college too, 16 to 22. I taught piano lessons, and that showed me how much I really like teaching. Just seeing the light bulb moments go off with my students, it gives me a high. It's amazing. It's so great to see someone start somewhere, being frustrated, not liking where they were, and then having these mindset shifts and moving forward. So I've always liked that. I don't know if I had a picture in my mind that I'd want to teach creative specifically, but I think I always knew I wanted to do something again in teaching. And then I always wanted my own business that wasn't necessarily service-based or just working with clients. So between the two, knowing I wanted to teach, knowing I wanted some kind of business that wasn't solely based on clients, it kind of was the perfect combo of everything. And so once it came together, I thought, oh yeah, this makes sense for me because these are the things that I always was into anyway. So it's kind of a perfect fit. But, and I, I know a lot of designers don't like, or they fight with that idea of like, well, I don't want to just teach designers. I'm not into that. And you know, if you're not passionate about it, or if that doesn't excite you, then I'm sure there's something else that might, like you said, selling assets. If you want to do passive income, there's so many opportunities for that. So I think it's not for everyone, you know, teaching isn't for everyone, but it is for me.
It's actually kind of struck a chord what you've just said with me, because I used to, between the ages of 17 and 21, 22, I taught karate.
Oh.
So after I got my black belt at 17, I went and then on the side, obviously volunteering. So I didn't pay for my classes. I taught the younger kids. Mm-hmm. And it's actually making me realize that actually I did enjoy that.
Mm.
And maybe my desire to not, or my desire to not focus on teaching or helping other designers, other creatives in my field, is more of a reaction to something else than the actual teaching.
Mm-hmm.
Because obviously, I'm sure when you were doing those one-on-ones, or maybe two or three people teaching those piano lessons, you aren't very present, as we're going back to. You're very much in that moment. And it would have been the same way when I was teaching these kids or these adults at karate, or I remember one kid who had pretty bad autism, and when his light bulb moments would go off, he'd be like ecstatic, absolutely going nuts. Aww. And maybe that's what it is. That actually has made a lot of sense, what you've just said, because it's some external point that is kind of pressuring that. Because obviously there is a lot of pressure to be like, you need to do everything. You need to try this and try that and set up this website and build that and ship this. It's just like,
yeah.
I'm 24. Yeah. Let me breathe.
Oh my gosh. You still have so much time ahead of you. I would say too, look at who you are. I think when we feel that pressure from the outside of like, you need to do so many things and you need to have all this stuff and diversify your income, whatever. Just look at yourself. Like, what is it what's calling to your heart? What were you excited about doing? And you know, it does sound like teaching was part of it too. And just looking at what makes us us, what have people benefited from by knowing us, by learning from us, and what are we really, what lights us up to talk about too? I think that's huge, because the happier you are in what you do, the better work you're going to produce. Like if you are ecstatic about talking about this new Photoshop brush that you've used, like, oh my gosh, that's perfect. Like we want people who are excited about something. And I've heard, I think it was Errol Gerson on the Future, one of the podcasts, he mentioned something about selling is just getting someone as excited about something as you are. It's not about pressuring them or convincing them. It's just getting them excited about it, just like you are. So if you're not excited about it, you're probably not going to sell that many things of whatever it is that you're trying to sell. So I think that's huge. And the other thing about teaching, you're talking about teaching, I had a student that, so I stopped at 22. I'm now in my 30s. So it's been over 10 years that I've taught since I quit. And I had a student reach out to me, I want to say about five or six years ago on Facebook. And sadly, it went to that message request like dungeon that you don't even know is there. And it was really sad. So I saw it a year later. But it was a beautiful note to me about how taking lessons from me actually changed her life. Like not just with piano. I'm sure she might play for fun here and there. But she said how she gained confidence in the lessons with me, and she was very, very shy. And now she has her dream job, she said, and I think she works in a, I don't know, it was an aquarium or something to do with animals in the ocean. And so she does that, and all this stuff happened in her life. And she's like, a big influence was the time that I took lessons from you. And I was like, I never even, that's insane that teaching someone an instrument would change their life. Like what happens in their life ahead of that, and how she broke out of her shell and gave her confidence. And I thought, wow. So no matter what I teach, I first want to concentrate on how can I empower people to learn, and how can I help them get the confidence they need, not only for the subject that I'm teaching, but for life. Because it's going to go well beyond just that. And I'm sure the same thing happens for you in karate too, that the people that you taught, it's going to influence them way beyond just those classes. And I'm sure you've had teachers that were the same with you, that you're going to remember.
Not many, but a few.
Yeah.
But I agree with you in that you don't see it in the moment.
No.
You don't see this day to day. You don't see it every time you have a lesson with your student, or you don't see it day to day when you're in secondary school or you're like 15 and you have this amazing teacher. But by the time you're 20, you're going, oh my God, I just pissed about in their lesson, but they were actually really helpful and supportive, or whatever. Mm-hmm. And until you can recognize that, as you've just phrased in that question of what have people around me benefited from by knowing me, or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually a good question. If you guys write at all, go and bounce that around in your head for 20 minutes on a blank piece of paper, because this is something that I struggle with a lot, which is self-reflection, which is for various different reasons that I won't dive into. But self-reflection is a big issue for me. And to be able to sit down and have a conversation like this with you and say, okay, well, we all have these moments, but it's which ones of them do you want to pull on? Which ones of these do you want to recognize as being beneficial to you as a human being, and what traits are positive for you? Because, which is going to be my next question that we'll get into in a minute, but the amount of noise that happens on a daily basis, and I just think about, I'm the last generation of people who grew up without a smartphone.
Oh, wow.
And I come from the people who are my age, up like 24, 25. Anyone basically kind of younger than 20 right now grew up with a smartphone of some degree. And I saw things like, it went from, we had VHS growing up, then it became like the weird mini CD, DVDs, mini CDs, HD DVDs, Blu-rays, all the way through. And then the internet, obviously, so you still had dial-up, and we had all this stuff all come through at once. And all those changes, all those things that I saw, I kind of forget how quiet it was.
Mm.
And how little noise there was, and how when you hung out with four friends or you went to a lesson or whatever, that was the only thing you could look at. There wasn't dog videos on TikTok. There wasn't the latest Chris Doe tweet slamming Beeple or whatever's going on in that particular moment. And when you don't see that benefit, as you say, you kind of, or at least I feel like this sometimes, where you feel a bit like a husk, a bit like, what am I doing to please the next thing that's coming in? What's the next thing I have to prepare for? Mm-hmm. It's more like those tower defense games where it's like, I have to prepare for the next round right now before this next wave of creatures comes at me.
Yes.
And whereas if you just found a different mountain, the creatures wouldn't come at you.
It's a good analogy.
Yeah, I have a piece about that I haven't published yet, but I but that makes a lot of sense to me. And that was going to be my next question, Melinda, was you run your own private community on your mastermind.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously you open the doors to that irregularly or quarterly or however long you've been doing that for. But now that you've found this sense of very tight-knit community, obviously with your own private group, but the Future Pro group, and being part of that sphere, have you found that to be more productive and more beneficial to your general purpose, your vision, your life, your mentality, than, say, just checking Twitter every day to see what your notifications are, or just checking Instagram to see whether the latest piece of content you've put up has actually hit the spot you wanted it to with random strangers?
Mm-hmm.
Because for me, and obviously a bunch of people in my audience, this idea of the crushing noise is very difficult to get over. And I'm finding more and more and more that I would rather have conversations like the one we're having right now for 3 hours than I would sit and try and argue with people on Twitter or be sad that someone made a bad comment on my Instagram post.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. The thing that I have so many comments about this, because I am so big on community and having that tight-knit, whatever it is, a tight-knit community, wherever you have it. Because it operates as a home base for you. It operates as your cheerleading squad. It operates as the people who are going to have your back, that they're going to defend you. They will encourage you. They'll pick you up when you fall. It's like a family. That's how I see especially my mastermind group too. Like, everybody is there for each other in a way that, like, we get it. We all get it because we're in the same boat. We're trying to do the same things. And then in the other groups I'm in, what I've noticed too about building an audience is it works best if the people who are your top evangelists, you know, like you know them and they end up either being your friends or they were your friends in the first place. And it amazed me how many people that I actually know and that it's built on relationships. It's not built on a ton of numbers with a bunch of complete strangers. These people I know, like, and I have conversations with them, and it is so much more gratifying to have those conversations, like you said, with people that I know that are trying to go to the same place I'm trying to go to and do the same thing I'm trying to do or complete a mission that's similar. And how can we help each other get there? And there's a saying, a rising tide lifts all boats, like that we all lift each other up as we help each other too. And I've seen that in the community. It's just like this synergy that's in it too. Like I'll see the same amount of people. And like when someone new comes along or someone's on the future and their platform is shown and now it's aware to a lot of people, I'll see a bunch of the future people that I know from the pro group. They're starting to comment now on that new person's account. And it's so cool to see this community together go and encourage other people and bring in new people into the community, because really that's what this is all about. It's not about fame. It's not about building this audience of complete strangers. It's relationships. It's built on that. So I find that the communities I have, the stronger relationships I have close to me, it ripples out, and the better the audience that there will be, you know, and there's going to be a lot less Twitter fights, unless that's what, you know, someone wants.
Unless you're actually going for Twitter fights, which occasionally
unless you're actually going for it. Then.
Occasionally I like to poke the bear, but more often than not, it, as you say, it's about the quality, not the quantity. Mm-hmm. And it's also about knowing who is your tribe, I guess. I think that's one way to put it. Yes. But speaking of kind of sayings, there is the saying of you go alone. Well, if you want to go far, you go together, don't go alone. But there comes a point at which how many people do you take with you before you have 12 people trying to read the map over your shoulder? And I didn't know what that balance was. And I think you're describing that very well in terms of having people who are your cheerleaders. Well, how big's a cheerleading squad?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not American. 15 people, like, or however big they get to. Yeah, it gets to a certain point at which it becomes too much visually. It becomes too much to keep track of, mm-hmm. and you can't maintain 300 or 400 relationships with people. It just doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
So I agree with you on that wholeheartedly. But it's taken me a long time to figure that out. It's been at least 2 years to kind of realize that that's the issue, rather than just trying to be like numbers.
Hard. Yeah. And it's hard. And I feel like we're always going to have to readjust, and it's never going to be like, okay, I got it. And we're there for years. It's going to always be this constant readjustment. And that's why I shut the doors to my mastermind, because it did reach critical mass where I had, I want to say 13, there's 13 that were consistently showing up on the calls, consistently in the Slack channel. And it came a point where everyone was so connected and tight with each other that any more than that, I couldn't even give them enough time to talk about what they needed to and what struggles they were having or what goals that they're trying to reach. And so I made the executive decision to go, okay, well, I'm not letting anyone else in, because no, they're not going to get the benefit that they need to at this point. If I do it, if I just open it up and we're money hungry for more people. And I thought, no, what's the benefit to them and how can I keep it that way? And I think that is the goal moving forward too, with anything that I do, is how can I give the maximum benefit to them without, you know, burning myself out, and where it's still an equal value exchange, really. That's what I'm always aiming at. So
you need to provide maximum value, but also enjoy doing it, is what you're saying.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause you don't want to get on those calls and be like, right, there's 25 of you. We're going to draw a lottery and a raffle of who gets to talk first. Who gets to talk to Melinda today?
and nobody would be happy with that either. No. They would all be frustrated. So I try to make it like, how can I make it enjoyable for myself, but then also, maximum benefit for them.
Excellent. So that's really good to hear as well, because in terms of community, I've been trying to pull together people to be in a mastermind for like a year now. And I'm like, get your stuff together. Like, we need to do this. And I found some people, I have people in kind of a call or whatever every so often, but it's trying to get that consistency is the hard thing, I think. Mm-hmm. But it's great to hear that you've got, what, 13 people showing regularly, yeah. which is like, that's a large dinner. Like, if you all went yeah. into the same building, that's a lot of people.
It is. And the fun part is we are talking about doing a retreat next year because we're all over the world. People in South Africa, in the UK, in Canada, and then here in the US. And we're talking about, like, what would it look like if we all got together and hung out somewhere? And,
you know, absolute chaos. Some kind of it would be.
Vacation. It would be. It would be. But how fun. We get to actually have that dinner party, the 13 people all together. So.
I mean, that was very similar to what the Creative Waffle Live event was like with Mark Hirons. He set up and then there was maybe 10 of us eventually at like 10 p.m. till 2 a.m. or whatever it was, just in one bar. And there was like 9 of us, and that was too many people to try and keep track of. But that's what I imagine this kind of retreat would end up being like. It would be amazing, thoughtful, and then just kind of degenerate into like... Chaos. I love you so much. You're so amazing at what you do.
Well, that's so funny you mentioned that, because something similar happened with a couple of people from the group, but then also it was a lot of people from the Future Pro group met up in New York recently when Christo spoke at a conference. And so there ended up being 9 of us that all ended up, I think I was including Chris, that ended up going to the conference, met together, and had the most amazing time because we've known each other online for so long. And a couple of people have met in person, but for the most part, they hadn't. And so we all came together there, and it was exactly what you said. It was like, and by the end of it, we're like family. This is amazing. And then a lot of us work together too. We'll collaborate on projects. Some of them were the people that I'm going to be working with at the agency. So it's interesting how just forming that tribe and having a good time and having shared common beliefs and values and what that can lead to is amazing.
Especially when you open the doors to less people, but more openly and more less treating them like, hey, you're an audience member. You follow my account. And you're like, oh, you're an actual human being. Hello.
Yeah. It's like, oh, you're a friend. Like, we all would go out to dinner with Chris, you know, like he was hanging out with us too. And he had a great time. And it was like, oh my gosh, this is cool. We're just all hanging out like friends would. And that goes back to my whole mantra of like, I just want to work on things I love with people I like that. Then that's a way to do it. Like, be friends with your audience members. And the ones too that, like you, Connor, like you're doing so much too, and you're providing so much value to the community. Like, I love connecting with people like that who are also giving back to the community in one way or another. Like, those are awesome people to get to know, because you see that there, it's like iron sharpens iron. Like, you're doing something really cool and it encourages and inspires me to go out and do what I'm doing. I want to hang out with a lot of people like that.
Thanks for the kind words, firstly. Yeah, appreciate it. But yeah, I agree. And I like people. It's tricky because I talk about this with Lydia, my girlfriend, quite a lot, where I'm like, I have a very strict kind of like criteria of who I want to be my friends. It sounds really horrible and like Terminator-esque, but it's more like it needs to be someone is like iron sharpens iron. Like, I want people who are better at something than I am. I need people who can I actually have a decent conversation with, but also when we're 6 pints in, it's perfectly okay to laugh at them falling over. Like, it's these types of moments that you don't get online, firstly, but you also very rarely find in person. And I don't think people realize that very much in terms of like, cool, you have 100,000 followers, but if you actually asked someone to turn up, like if 100 people turned up, how many of them would be complete nutters? Like, and how many of them would you actually want to talk to? And it's like 1 in 100, like it, or even less than that. So to hear that you found that is really cool. And that's something that I think people listening at home should be striving for as well, is that I still get messages to this day being like, when will I start getting more followers? When will I start finding these people? When will I get an audience? And I'm like, when you stop trying.
Yeah. When you stop, it's kind of like the whole thing of stop focusing on the money. When you actually focus on doing good work and what you're passionate about and what you're good at, the money will come. It's the same thing. When you start giving value and you're a benefit to the community and you're concentrating on that and quality, the followers and the audience will come. And because it's not about the followers, it's not about the money. And when we stop making it about those things, that's when we actually end up getting them. But it is that weird, ironic way that life works.
Yeah. And kind of to in the last 5 minutes or so that we've got, I wanted to ask you, and I've written this kind of the last thing on my list, which is, what are you most interested in right now? What's getting you most jazzed about moving into 2020 and maybe the next few years beyond that? What has your attention to kind of end this on maybe a less deep note and a more of a like, hell yeah, 2020.
Yeah, well, starting with the deep note, and then I'll go up.
Okay.
the whole so watching the light bulb moments of people when they learn something and then they make transformations in their own life. And so what that's translating to is me coming out with more ways of teaching and things that will help them get there. So next year is going to be really focused. Like my number one focus is going to be on this boot camp that I'm coming out with, and how I can space it out so that I can still work on really fun projects, whether that be client projects or concept projects, anything I want. But that I'm very excited about that and where that's going to lead in the next few years. So I'm focusing on building processes for that too, which kind of dreading, but also know that it's a necessity for me to get that done. So yeah, that's going to be the focus for next year. And I'm super excited about that.
Excellent. Is there anything else coming up on the horizon, or is it just a case of like, let's keep going with what we've got and a boot camp?
Yeah. Well, working with Radcat, working with that team is going to be, I know we're going to have some really fun projects next year. I don't know what they're going to be yet, but I know it's going to be a good time.
Yeah. That's really great to hear as well. It's also good to hear that you are looking, obviously we're only talking about March, as you say, for your boot camps. That's 3 months away, but to be able to have a vision of saying, right, we're going to go further ahead and then come backwards and be like, I'm super interested in this for long enough that I can build something on it and kind of ramp up that momentum. Because I'm sure by the time March comes, you'll be absolutely screaming to kind of kick this door open and go, I made this! Mm-hmm. We did it!
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's how I feel. I'm running a beta boot camp right now. And like every single pre-sale that I got for the beta, I was texting my groups. I'm like, guys, I just landed 8 more. I just landed 5 more. And I would keep, and that's why another reason why it's good to have a community that you can share all the wonderful things that happen. But yeah, that's it. I was so excited. So I can't even imagine how it'll be when March rolls around.
That's really great to hear. Awesome. Okay. So to kind of wrap up, Melinda, where can people find you on the internet?
Yeah, they can find me a lot of places, actually. I hang out a lot on Instagram under Melinda Livesey, hanging on Twitter, Melinda Livesey _. You can see me on the Futures YouTube show. You can see me or find out more information about what I do and what I teach on marksandmaker.com. And then if somebody is new to freelancing and wants to know just the basics of it, that would be prelance.com, PRE-lance.
Awesome. All those links, guys, are going to be down in the description as always, including I'm going to put Radcat's website down there as well because it's a really cool website and I like the people who are running it. So you can check out all of those down in the description. Melinda, thank you very much for coming on the show today. You'll be hearing this, guys, when you hear it, because we're scheduling these. It's 2020. That's where we're looking. But if you're listening to the show on Apple Podcasts or a place you can review the show, please leave us a 5-star review and let us know what you thought of today's episode. And as always, we'll be back same time next week. See you in a bit.